Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Attention pro athletes. Want to secure your financial legacy and thrive off the field? Oak Bridge Wealth Management, led by wealth manager Chris Anicetti, is your dedicated financial planning ally. But don't take it from me. Take it from the Dallas Cowboys' Tyler Biadasz. He says, Chris set goals financially and has been incredibly impactful in my journey in the NFL. Experience our customized, comprehensive approach, trusted by top NFL players. Don't leave your financial success to chance. Connect with Chris on Instagram at OakbridgeWM_Anicetti. That's OakbridgeWM_Anicetti. And let Oak Bridge Wealth Management guide you across the goal line.
Bernstein again. Good opening. Catch 5. Catch 10. Hurdle's a man. And he goes all the way to the 15-yard line. 17-yard.
Welcome back to Believe in Badgers on the Believe Network, presented by betonline.ag and Oak Bridge Wealth Management. I'm Matt Perkins, joined as always by Badger legend, the Hebrew Hammer himself, Matt Bernstein. Bernie, how are we doing today?
Dude, every day is a holiday. I'm taking this call from the grandparents' house, and they are on vacation, set at 62, the heat, the temperature. And yes, Bob Daugherty, I'm a wimp now. I am frozen solid in this place. So if you're watching on YouTube, you can see that I'm wrapped up in a North Face jacket and a blanket, and then I'm still freezing.
Well, like Bernie mentioned, we've got Bob Daugherty on with us here today, which we are very excited about because, you know, we're questioning Bernie's toughness right now. I know Bob's got a couple stories about how tough Bernie is. So thank you so much for hopping on with us.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
Of course, man. Of course. We're excited. Like I said, and we're excited wherever you are tuning in. Want to remind you that we are presented by betonline.ag, where they continue to be your number one source for all of your online sports wagering needs. You name it, they've got it over there at BetOnline. Head on over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with our promo code BELIEVE. That's BLEAV, BetOnline, where the game starts. Bernie, where do you want to start today?
Well, let's talk about where Daugherty came from. His look, Bob. Were you ever short, small as a kid? Like you're like 7 feet tall when I remember you. But let's start with young Bob Daugherty up in Oshkosh, playing football. Like what was that? How'd you get into it?
Well, actually, growing up, you know, I watched a lot of football. Growing up, I mean, it was the Packers. It was the heyday, right? But right when, you know, we had the magic man, Mikowski, down the road in Green Bay. And I can tell you the very moment where I was sitting when Favre took over. but I never really played a lot of ball. My folks didn't play organized sports growing up. So a family friend came to my dad one day and asked, you know, you got a big kid. Does he want to play football? And so I picked up in fourth grade and I had a big X on my helmet because I could never touch the ball and had to be on the line and the whole spiel. So started playing peewee and loved it. You know, it's Wisconsin in the late 80s, early 90s, playing peewee football in October, you know, leaves are falling. It's a great time. So started playing line. And then in seventh grade, when we got to branch out, it was the first time they moved me to tight end. I wanted to be a quarterback, they moved me to tight end, D end. And from there, I stayed there for the rest of the time.
So when did you think, like, when did you start having success? Like, was it early? Were you like a ninth grader and you're like, wow, I can catch, I'm doing all these great things. Maybe I could take this to the next level?
I think early on I was always told, like, you know, you're athletic, you're big, but you're too nice. And then all of a sudden in sophomore year of high school, I started on varsity. And that first game, I was like, I can't be nice. These guys are really mean. There's a guy with a tattoo over there. Like, oh, my God. So that first game, that first snap, I mean, I was, you know, your first game at varsity, you're just a ball of nerves. You don't know what it's going to be like. And that ball was snapped, and I hit that kid, and that kid kind of gave a little bit. And next thing I know, he's getting pancaked. I'm going up to the linebacker. He's getting pancaked, and I'm like, okay, I think I can do this. And then it just kind of took off from there, sophomore year.
So sophomore year was the year you're like, wow, I could do this. How tall? Yeah. You were still what were you, like 6'6"?
Yeah, 6'6", like two. So I was 6 foot, 200 pounds in sixth grade, and then I hit like my adult size when I was like 14.
I've been my adult size since I was 13, 14 too. Like I, yeah, like
he's 6'7", 285. Look at him.
I know. Well, I was 6'3". Like I was 6'3", and I was like, yes, I'm going to be like 6'7", 6'8". I'm going to be this awesome, massive athlete. Yeah. Nope. Sorry.
No.
Topped out at 6'3". And in my mom's family, I'm the shortest man, of course.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. No, my cousins are like 6'7", and 6'6". Uncles are 6'5". Two of them are 6'5". My other cousins, my height is 6'3". Like a bunch of freaking giants. Wow. Bunch of freaking giants. So, but I mean, you must have been around a bunch of freaking giants too, because, you know, I assume like if you're that big, your family's probably pretty big, and you were playing around some big boys up there in northern Wisconsin.
To be honest with you, so dad's pretty tall, pretty built guy. Mom was about 6 foot, skinny as a rail. And honestly, I mean, besides Darren Charles that we played with, we had guys, average side high school players, but there was definitely. I was definitely had a leg up on the overall size as the average, especially the more skilled like tight ends, DNs. Like 6'4", 230 was kind of the max out. So high school was pretty fun. It was pretty fun. Yeah, a little bit. Actually, so. So as far as like when Wisconsin came in, right off the bat, sophomore year at the end of that year, named the all conference. And then I'll never forget my high school coach calls me down to his office, and I go down there and he hands me his letter, and he says, that looks like your journey's starting. And I'm like, I have no idea what that means. I just took it and I left. And as I'm walking back to my classroom, I look down and it's Texas football. And I'm like, Texas football. I mean, this is right after Ricky Williams. This is right. Like, I'm like, what is this? I rip it open and they're inviting me to come down and do like a camp and a visit and all this other stuff. So I'm through the roof. I go home and I give it to my mom and she loses it. My baby's not going to Texas. He's not going da, 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 da. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. And from then on, I mean, it was, there was a lot of recruiting. I mean, I had quite a few letters, calls, all that other kind of stuff. But Wisconsin came on as far as sending letters right after sophomore year, pretty quickly after that.
What was after the Texas one? What was the next school that was like, holy crap, I can't believe blank school is trying to reach out to me?
Notre Dame.
So Notre how many Dame camps like, did you end up going to?
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin's the only place you ever camped at. You didn't end up going to camp at any of these other places.
No. None of the other places.
None of your
friends. Yeah, went to camp after junior year, and that's where I got offered, which was kind of crazy because I remember, you know, I've been listening to this podcast for a while now, which is just great, and I'm hearing everybody's stories, and it's all the same. Or like they bring you in the back room. It's kind of like a scene from The Godfather, where all of a sudden you're getting pushed in the back, and then there's LV in the corner, and you're seeing the Don, and he asks you that question. It's like, who could ever say no in that scenario? Like you're in his office, you're in the middle of this whole thing, and he asks you a question, you're going to say yes. I don't care who you are. But yeah, I was the first one to go through and say yes, and went back in the room, and there was, Darren was there. He got offered the same time. And I think, I don't remember who else it was. Oh, Taj. Taj was there, and he was getting escorted around in JP's, white, Cadillac. And he committed then too.
That's quite a group of guys Antosh all committed at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there may have been one other person there. I don't remember. But that those definitely the ones that stick out. Yeah.
Did you and DC go through kind of this journey together?
Completely together. It was super special. So Darren never played freshman year football, and then came out sophomore year, and they put him at wide receiver. And I mean, he was good right off the bat. I mean, you throw a fade to him in high school, even a slant, like he definitely developed over the years. But we played a game against a guy named Eric Jensen, who we ended up playing against when we played Iowa in 2002. He was at a school that we played against in high school. And it's a real close game. It's a good team. We went for two to win the game. And Darren, the ball was thrown a little high and went through Darren's hands. And I kid you not, that was sophomore year. Darren, in junior year and senior year, after catching probably 200 balls, he never had another drop. Not one time in high school did he drop another ball. It was, and I mean, some of the catches he had were insane.
Just like mossing kids left and right.
Oh, it was so crazy. Yeah.
But he could also, I mean, he was so like, he could also just like, even in college, just run and just kind of like put his hand up, like do the Randy Moss thing and just be like, yeah, just throw me the ball. I'm going to run by this person because I'm taller, faster.
He did everything. He did anything he wanted to. And it was in high school, it was like, you know, so they put him out for track and he was like, I'd never done track before. Hey, I'm going to high jump 7 feet. It's like, dude, come on. You know, it was unbelievable. Basketball. Never really played basketball. I'll just drop 30 against a crosstown rival. No big deal. that's what he was. That's what he is.
So Bob, you're saying that was your official visit when you went and they took you in the back and you're like, yeah, I'm jumping in? Or that was,
well, that was before camp. That's when I verbally committed. That was after junior year of high school going into senior year of high school. Yeah, the official visit then was the end of senior year with the cookie and the whole spiel, yeah.
Who was your host for the official? Yes,
Brad. Al Johnson.
Really?
Yep, it was Al Johnson. Yeah, he had that old Explorer. We went roaming around Madison, his old Explorer.
Al Johnson was a senior? He was a redshirt junior? He had one more year left or two more years?
Two.
So yeah, you had an upperclassman, like a way upperclassman as your host. That must have – and I know Al Johnson, and he was a pretty fun dude. Was that a wild time? You don't have to get into all the details, but it was pretty wild?
I mean, at that time, I wasn't as experienced in the Madison lifestyle as I was shortly after that. It wasn't quite as wild as it soon became. But it was definitely a good time. I mean, he's a great guy, great host. It was a lot of fun. So funny story about how like naive. So we went to the Avenue for the steak that I heard what Casey was talking about, the steak on his podcast. It was a great story. But Darren and I were so naive at this official visit. We're sitting with Nick Koshart, Benning, Al Johnson, and I think even Ben Johnson. And you know, like, that's not a table full of non-judgmental guys for a couple of recruits to sit next to, right? Like they're judging you right off the bat. So they bring out this beautiful prime rib, and we have no idea what prime rib is. We asked him to take it back and cook it more. And I'll never forget the look on Nick Koshart's face. And I was like, who are these bumpkins you guys are recruiting? Yeah, we had no idea. And then the waitress is like, all right, I guess we'll take this prime rib back and cook the heck out of it. Yeah.
Man, that's a table, though. Ben Johnson scared me for so many years, and then he just was nice to me.
Yeah, that's all he did that whole dinner, to stare, chew and stare.
How much prime rib was consumed at that dinner is my question.
There were a lot of cows that went down that day. A lot of cows.
Okay, so you end up coming to Wisconsin – that following summer, and you end up in the seminary. First of all, what was your, were you ready for that? How mentally, physically, emotionally? And I mean, you guys got to know each other very well while you were there. So sort of walk us through your process of arriving in Madison and then getting out to the seminary.
So, I mean, you know, going back a little bit too, coming out of high school, Darren and I were both pretty high recruits and we were recruited pretty heavily. We both committed to Wisconsin early. And for me, Wisconsin was the only school. I mean, that was right at the Rose Bowls, Dane. Like, I remember just even thinking about watching that 23-yard run when he broke the record. I remember running home and watching that game. I still get goosebumps thinking about it, you know? So it was, I mean, to be able to be there and to play was just amazing. So you show up there and you still think it's the recruiting process. All these coaches are your buddies. They're going to give you hugs when you show up. And we get dropped off there for freshman camp and walk in the gym. And all the stuff is on the gym floor. And I'm like, okay, that's kind of weird, but it's cool. And I found my little bag full of stuff. I'm like, holy cow, free gloves, shoes. This is great. Da, da, da. We get up to the room and I meet this guy and he's got this New York accent and he's just, he's like talking a million miles an hour. And the first night you go to bed and you're nervous and somehow you go to sleep. And I wake up that first morning and there's no door on the bathroom. There's no door on the room, nothing like that. And I look up and he's sitting on the toilet staring at me and he's just got his head around the corner and he's talking to me like we've known each other our whole lives. And he's like, dude, what do you think today is going to be like? You think we're gonna do this? You think we're gonna do that? What do you think about this? What do you think about that? And I'm laying in the bed and I'm like, why did I pick the bed that looks into the bathroom? There's no never done that. And I'll be honest with you, we were there for 21 days, and all 21 days I woke up, he's asking me questions from that toilet. All 21 days.
I will say that is true. All of that is 100% true. And I still do that to my wife, and 100%. She hates it. She's like, let me wake up. I'm like, no. What do you think today's going to be like? Hey, what's going on? That's
all of a sudden, like, I would kind of move, and you'd just be in there waiting to hear the bed sheets move a little bit. And then a head would pop around, and be like, hey, what do you think today's going to be like? Do you think we're going to go? I'm like, dude, burn. I just, oh my God. I was just dreaming that we weren't here, and now we're.
Well, Doc, they also, the problem with that place was it was 900 degrees. They didn't tell you to bring a fan. We showed up with all the stuff we owned for the, and then no one tells you there's no door on a toilet, like in the bathroom.
No.
That, yeah. To me, was the most bananas thing to ever happen.
You assimilated quick, though. It was like you embraced that really quick. I'm not going to lie.
I'm a pretty out there type of human being, Bob. I think you know that. At one point, what can you do? Like, you have to embrace it. Yeah. Nothing else to do.
100%.
Walk us through that, because you took off at that camp. So walk us through, like, what your experience outside of, like, having these, you know, really deep conversations with me at, like, 6:15 in the morning. What was camp like for you, and how quick did you take to it? Who was your coach also?
Tim Davis.
It was Tim Davis, right? Okay, right. So, what was your experience at camp like? And then, you know, you started getting with the ones. Like, that must have been awesome.
It was awful. like the camp was awful. Like, there's nothing, just nothing fun about it. You wake up at 5:30 in the morning. You've got this guy talking to you from the toilet. You're scared to death. You're gonna miss or be late to any of the 487 things you have to do in a day. It was crazy. I mean, the install, the verbiage, it was just a whirlwind from jump, and there was no transition. We had our 3 days where all the freshmen are together. But I think that was even a ploy to make us even more psychologically broken down, because you get a little confidence and then they just crush it when Darius Jones and Erasmus James and Jake Sprague and Ben Herbert, Nick Riley, they'll just crush your hopes and dreams instantly. The speed, the practices, the fact that practices, you know, I think a lot of high school kids now practice the way we did in college, but from us coming from high school, and we had a good high school program, our high school coaches were great. You never heard of periods. You never heard of indie install, like 9-on-7, that wasn't a thing. So then all of a sudden have this organized thing, and then to watch film, oh, that film room, I can still smell it. Like, it's crazy how the transition was. And yeah, Even that summer before we went to work out, the first time we did stadium stairs. And Bernie, were you there that summer before? You were, right? Do you remember the first time we ran those stadium stairs and we did 8 of them and that one guy hid in the press box and we had to come down and run cross fields? I thought, this is someone has to go to prison for this. It was just crazy.
They used to say, don't show up in the summer on a Tuesday. And every single person, for some odd reason, showed up. I showed up on a Tuesday, and I was up there running. And even dudes like Calvin Barrett, who I love to death, but he was not in great physical shape. He was running up and down doing it, and I was dying the whole time.
Dying.
Running behind Calvin Absolutely Barrett, dying. Who's like 300.
Yeah. And there's aspects of that stadiums. When you're coming down and you realize, you look down and you're like, oh, man, if my legs give out and I go down, that wall is going to support me. And then you get to the bottom of the press box and you realize it's only a foot and a half high. Nope. You're going right over.
Dude, I would say, Doc, what was shocking to me was the gravitas of, like, they took speakers out and were blasting music at the stadium. Like, all these things, the magnitude of the training and how, you know, like, you watch these dudes who are coming in working their asses off. Sorry, Mom and Carrie, for saying asses on the podcast. But, like, I worked out in high school. This was not even close to what high school was like. So everything you're saying is right. The change, I had no chance at camp my first year. I was a jabroni. I couldn't pick up what was going down. I was getting my butt kicked. Nick Grison was having an all-you-can-eat field day every day against me. And all I could say is, you got to get through it. Once you get through that one, it's like, all right, I'm, you know, but Bob, you were playing. You were going to be a player in a game. I was just a guy on the sideline. What was that?
It was a lot because, but at the same point, like, you guys knew you were going to go to the scout team and be beaten for a year. And I don't want to say he had it a little easier, but we kind of did. And knowing that Thursday was the walkthrough day, Friday was definitely the walkthrough day. Saturday you traveled, you got to eat that in-towner meal, like that fried fish. Come on now. There were benefits to being destroyed during the week and during camp, you know. But at the same point, like, there was also a lot more expectation, especially as a true freshman. I mean, everything you did was wrong. Everything you did was wrong. And then Marcinelli would come in and do something, and it was perfect. Look what Mark did. I'm like, dude, I just did the same thing. And you're like, no, you didn't. Yes, I did. I just did the same thing. And then all of a sudden, like, he would miss one block, and they'd be like, oh, it's all right, Mark. You'd miss one block, and it was like you were getting ostracized. I'm like, well, wait a minute. This is craziness. Like, I don't understand. But there was – I mean, it was a huge – transition in itself. And then when he started transitioning towards that first game against Virginia our freshman year, and we got into that, like, game prep week, it got even more insane, because then, like, every rep mattered. Now you needed to know, who are you going against? What's the scouting report? Did you watch film? It's an absolute whirlwind.
Did you work out?
Did you go to class?
There was just so much that – I guess there's so much, not just within the football pillar, but the academic pillar. And then they demanded you do X, Y, and Z that nobody knows about, right? They would give us DVDs so you'd go home and watch your film at home too. I mean, that would – so it's like, got to the point where you're like, man, I'm literally just doing football all day, and there's a little time for, like, going to class. If you went to class because you had to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning to work out – and Bob, were you still in the developmental lift group on Sundays?
Oh, yeah.
So you were starting or playing a lot and had to go to the lift group on that through the lift group. Like, there are a lot of things that broke my back my freshman year, but that 11 a.m. lift group into the run, I was like, man, I hate everything about lifting right now.
The first few weeks I had to do that developmental lift. And then when Schultz got hurt and I started going, like, the permanent two deep, I didn't have to go that lift anymore. And I was like, this is I'm never getting out of the two deep again. There's no way I'm ever getting out of the two deep again. Never. No.
Mm-mm. So, Doc, you talk about Marcinelli. And to me, I cherished his friendship as a young person because he really included us, I think. What was he like as a mentor slash did he take you under his wing? Like, what did he teach you? What was your relationship with him?
I called him, affectionately, I called him Dad there because he really was. Like, he took you directly under your wing. He'd always constantly give you tips, constantly. And not just about the play, but he would also tell you, like, you know, be here, watch film at this time. This is what you're looking for. Make sure you get in on time. Get on Det's good side. Be on Bot's good side. Like, everything about it. Make sure you go to school. Don't park here. Don't park there. Ride your scooter there if it's 75 degrees on a Sunday. Like, he knew everything. He knew everything about making it work there. And he happily shared it. And if you had a problem or if you had a bad day, sometimes he'd come down and sit next to you and hit you in the back of the head if you needed a pick-me-up. If you needed to get your butt chewed on top of getting your butt chewed by everybody else, he'd do it. But he was also the first guy that if you made a good play, he would spank you on the butt or give you a high five or a slap on the helmet. He's the first guy to do it. He was the best. And it was really hard the second sophomore year taking over. I mean, it was like the fact that he gave me his number for my second year meant so much. And to try and fill those shoes that next year, it was impossible to fill those shoes. He was great.
So, Doc, we got to talk. We get out. First off, one of the best days of my life was getting on that yellow school bus at the seminary with all of my gear. And we move into the towers. Fifth-floor crew. It's you, DC, Hose, and Kleber in one room. Yeah. And me, OD, Isaac Ballou, and Matt Lawrence on the other side.
Yes, yes.
What a wild floor. That was a wild time to be alive in the towers with the football team living there.
Whoever owned that building must have just hated us. I mean, like, the screens coming off the windows instantly, the snowball fights, the filling up the garbage cans and leaning them against the door and knocking on the door and running away so that all the water pours into the room. It was endless, man. The dynamic lap in the hallway and just your shorts for no reason at 10 o'clock at night. Like, yeah, that place was nonstop. It was nonstop fun. You just wander into these tiny little rooms, and to think about how many of us fit into those, like, what were they, 8x8 or whatever rooms? You just fill that thing full of these people, and you just had a great time. You know, you're sitting on top of one another, constantly doing something. It was an absolute blast. Every day was a blast.
Every day was a blast. I don't know how else to say it besides, like, you can constantly hang out with your buddies at your dorm, and then we just took our scooters down to the stadium and hung out with our buddies there. Yes, there was a lot of other pressures and other things going on. We took the same class. Yo, Doc, I remember we were in – was it clap for credit or maybe it was a history lecture in the humanities building?
I took a lot of clap.
You laid down behind the – it was probably clap for credit. You laid behind the chairs and fell asleep with your cell phone on your chest. And every one of us kept calling you, and it would ring out loud. You didn't wake up at all. You just kept – and they were getting so – the dude was getting so mad because the phone kept ringing and ringing. And we were just looking at each other and, like, it was like, all right, you're out. Calm down. Because I sat across on the other side. And I'm like, get him. And we just – oh, man, it was so funny.
Oh, my God, that's right. Yes. Oh, my God. I totally forgot about that. Totally forgot about that. You know, I forgot. I wanted to mention at camp, the hazing thing when they would come up and get you.
Yeah.
On the freshman floor, I will never forget when we knew they were coming up. We could hear them, and it was like, "Oh God, here we go!" And I looked at you like, "What are we gonna do for our defenses?" And you looked me dead in the eye, and that's the only time you were ever serious to me. You looked at me and you said, "We're gonna take it. We're gonna stand here, and we're gonna take it." And I'm like, oh, okay. All right, Bernie. I'll never forget the look in their eyes. And they came in here expecting us to run and we didn't budge. And they were like, okay, guys. And everyone just kind of nodded and was like, okay, we know where they stand. Awesome. They still roughed us up and threw your stuff in the shower. But it was that was some of the best advice ever. It was just like you looked at me and you said, we're not running anywhere. We're just going to take it. And I'm like, that's my boy. That's my boy right there. You can talk to me in the morning on the toilet anytime. That's fine.
The more you fight it, the more they're just going to keep coming after you. I was like, man, let's just get this over with.
That's exactly what you said. Is that they're just going to get us regardless. Like, just do it. Let's go.
And another thing I loved, like when they would tape up a freshman, and then it was like, all right, the next person to help him is getting taped up. But you couldn't leave your boys there. So it's like this round robin circle of just like utter stupidity. And to be honest, like it wasn't that bad. You just tape on your hair, on your arms was really annoying. But outside of that, wasn't that bad.
No, it wasn't. If you took it and you proved them that you wanted to be part of the team and you got through it, they'd left you alone and you were part of the team. If you kept fighting it, some of those guys got it kind of bad. It got a little bad for some of them, but you just took it. You earned their respect. That's what you did.
Attention athletes. Do you want a frictionless and tailored financial planning experience to secure your future? Well, look no further. Introducing Oak Bridge Wealth Management, the premier financial planning firm for professional athletes. Led by wealth manager Chris Anicetti, our team provides a unique and comprehensive approach, ensuring your financial success both on and off the field. We understand the unique challenges you face as a professional athlete, from managing cash flow habits to planning major business purchases and navigating complex contracts. That's why we've developed a proven process, working closely with our strategic partners to provide seamless solutions for your unique financial journey. Our services evolve with your career, offering short, mid, and long-term goal setting, portfolio optimization, real estate investments, and more. As you transition to life beyond the field, we support you with career development and philanthropic ventures. But don't just take our word for it. Top NFL players like Chase Roulier, Tyler Biadasz, Alec Ingold, and more trust Oak Bridge Wealth Management to guide them towards financial success. Troy Dye of the Minnesota Vikings says, I really love the work that Chris and the rest of the Oak Bridge group do. I especially like the honesty and transparency when it comes to setting up financial goals and plans that best fit my needs and situation. It's time to elevate your financial game plan. Connect with Chris on Instagram at OakbridgeWM_Anicetti. That's OakbridgeWM_Anicete. And join the winning team.
All right, so the Towers is wild. Any fun stories from the Towers, Doc, that is PG-17?
Ooh. Well,
give or take.
I do remember... I can't say for sure if you're part of this, and if your mom was listening, I'm going to say you weren't. But we would go on the elevator, and we would have shorts, and we would hold them around our waist, but we didn't have any like pants on in the backside. And then people would ride up, and we'd get off, and they'd like see our backsides, and they would realize that. We did that quite often. That was some good times. But as far as like PG. DG said, nah, I don't know about the tower stories. The garbage cans were a big one, man. That was always constantly you hear a door knock, you open up and you get water in there, and you're like, oh, brutal.
You started not opening your door. I remember starting to walk down. We'd go through to Isaac's and Matt Lawrence and open that. I would always open their door to be like, no. I haven't hit enough times with this stupid water thing. Dude, I remember a couple things from the Towers. One, the patty melt that they made in the cafeteria underneath was bananas delicious.
Yes.
I gained like 15 pounds my freshman year eating that and everything else I could find and drinking every single thing I could find also that was at the Towers, which was great. I remember when they would pull the fire alarm overnight First off, I'd be so mad. Like, none of you losers are getting up at 5 in the morning to work out. And I have this 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm not going to go back to sleep, but I'm going to go under my bed and hide. So when the fire department comes up, they won't see me. Do you remember, like, I would put suitcases in, so no one could see. Dude, God forbid the building was on fire. I was a goner. Like, I was under there.
It always went through my head, like, is this one for real? And yet at that point, you're like, you know what? Take me. Because otherwise, I got to go to Lyft and see debt at 6 o'clock in the morning. You know what? Take me. I'm done. I'm ready.
I'm tired. Ready. Take me.
I'm all done. Like, I'm all done.
And first off, that 1 year alone has changed my outlook on, like, being early to every single thing I do. But I remember having my pants with my belt in, everything in my pockets, keys, cell phone, because, like, you didn't need it really because it didn't do anything at this time. Boots, socks. I would wear my socks and the underwear I was going to wear on. And then I had a t-shirt also. So when I got out of bed, I literally put my feet into my pants, pulled them up, put them on, put my t-shirt on, brushed my teeth, put my sweatshirt jacket on. I was out the door in like 5 to 7 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
That's how bananas that was.
And that whole time you're brushing, just like, you're just trying to get that brush in. You got to get there. By the time you got there, you already had a pump in your tricep. You were just ready to go. Yeah, and then to ride on those blizzards down University Ave in those scooters, you had to have your feet out. And yeah, it was not glorious. You know, you watched the program came out right before we went in, and we anticipated it was going to be like this awesome, glorious, every day is a magical thing. It's not, man. It is unbelievably hard work. And I still tell people, I remember to this day, like, my freshman year schedule from morning till end, every single night, 5:30 or 6 a.m. till 10 o'clock at night, every night. It was nonstop. It's crazy.
Yeah, because we go to practice, and then you would go to training table to eat dinner. And then they said you had to be here at 7 o'clock. We had to be in the Fetzer for 2 hours.
Yep. 2 hours driving Scott Cavanaugh nuts. He hated us all.
Driving him nuts. And there was no cell phone. There was no real, like, you couldn't call anyone because you were down underneath. They didn't work. The computers had, remember, what was that game? It was like a pinball. It was a pool game on some, like, old technology website that had a couple games, and we would go and play it like you could not believe. And Kavanaugh would find us and be pissed that we were playing games and not doing it. But all we did was mess around, because what do you do for 2 hours? You can only do so much homework, and then you didn't want to do it. And also, dude, at 9 o'clock at night to drive back to the towers to literally watch people get ready to go out, and you're like, now I got to do this tomorrow. 5:30 wake up. Yep. It was ruthless. Now, I wouldn't give it up for the world, because our experience is so much different than a normal person's life. But we could talk about it, but how great was the off season when literally Wednesdays you could go out, Tuesday nights or another new Wednesday, and then you go out Friday, Saturday night. And I remember putting work in those days. Like,
it was
beer. We're going to eat, let's drink, and we're not thinking about football. It was
way too great. Way too great. That offseason was like, wait a minute, we can do what? Wait a minute, what? We don't have –
And they still tried to make it hard to do those things, because they would have a Friday, you do leg circuit, and then in the afternoon we'd go back and do – so they want you to miss FAC. But the couple times they let us go to FAC – people, it's like I remember the first time I had a beer for everyone. It's like they let us out, these animals, out into the wilderness, and people were, people were just bombed out doing crazy things.
If looking back on what we must have looked like coming into those places, I think animals is the only way to describe it. I mean, this is the only way. I mean, we just rushed into these places and took over like locusts. I mean, it was
feral. I think that's the word I would say. Feral,
man. Like, seriously, it was. I mean, every place we went into was just like, boom, here we are. I mean, big, but all great guys. I mean, everyone was such great. And that was another thing about camp, too. It was terrible, but that half hour before you went into that last team meeting with Elvi at night at camp, I mean, everyone just to get together, and that's where you made that team. I mean, it was literally a cohesive brotherhood so quickly. And it was, I mean, you still had like your upper echelon senior guys and your freshman guys, but still your team. You knew who your team was. You knew who your guys were, and no matter what, you know, it was a close-knit group. It's an awful experience, but it's something I would never go back and do it again, but I do cherish I do cherish those times immensely.
So Doc, let's go on to now we move to the region, which is pretty funny because now it's you, Kleber. Where's DC? You guys are literally across the hall. It could have been the stupidest thing that ever happened to the region. It was me and Jason Palermo, and it was Kleber. Yep. You was Jeff Lang in that
Stelly. Room? Stelmacher. So we're at camp that sophomore year, and he's a walk on. No, because we each had their own room, right? So Stelly came up to me and he asked. He's like, "I'll save money if you room up with me." And then because I roomed with somebody, I would get like, I don't know, $225 a month or whatever it was, which was, rich at that time. We were roommates there. Kleber had his own room and you and J-Po were across the hall. And I mean, just every night, like door would open up, Bernie would come in, no shirt on, athletic shorts, and an entire frozen pizza, and just be rolled up like a taco, eating a frozen pizza after we ate training table a half hour ago because he's starving. just talking about life, sitting in the living room of the region, staring out that window, looking at the stadium, like, dude, we got 4:30 lift tomorrow. Oh my god! But yeah, the region was great. You just go into different people's rooms. You go down there. Johnny Sill was shaving somebody's head or doing somebody's hair down there on the second floor. Taj's room was always – everyone was in there doing their thing in Taj's room. Like, it's just so much fun. You just constantly roam those halls. You just constantly roam the halls. And every one of those rooms and halls looked the exact same, but you knew, like, exactly – would you get off of any floor and know exactly, oh, I'm on the third floor because this door has this little scratch in it? Because you're through those halls so many times in different people's rooms. Like, it's crazy.
I had to pay the region so much money for breaking things because of Kleber. That's all I'm going to say. Do you know how much a fire extinguisher cost in circa 2002? Because I do. I shot so many at your door for Kleber, like throwing stuff at our door. And literally, granted, it's 5 feet, 10 feet across a hall, 8 feet across a hall. They would write me letters. This is your last opportunity. You know, this is how they used to get me, though, Doc. They'd be like, this is your last opportunity until we call your daddy, Barry Alvarez. You're not paying for this fire extinguisher. I was like, no. How much is it? Yes. I'll give you guys more. Just don't tell him.
No matter what, whatever you do, do not tell him a thing. Don't tell him a thing. Yeah, I know.
Don't tell JD.
He was the worst instigator that's ever lived. Man, he's just the worst instigator. Like, he would tell you to do something. You'd be like, that's a terrible idea. 30 seconds later, you're doing it. And you're like, how am I doing this? How am I doing this? I don't know. We had the slingshots and the quarters in our room, and we shot, like, the microwave with it. We shot the walls. There's all these holes along the drywall. And before we leave there, Kleber's dad shows up, Steve, and he comes in and he's got all this putty, all this paint, all this other stuff. He puts it on the table and he sits down. He's got a six pack of beer and he's like, there you go, boys. Learn how to drywall. We're in there spackling. I had no idea how to do anything.
Six pack of Bud Light.
That's exactly what it was.
Also, Doc, it was a six pack of Bud Light. He, if you ever go golfing with Steve Kleber, you will know that he has them everywhere in his bag. It is the funniest thing. He never needs a beer. You never have to buy him one. He never needs one because he has like them slow pace. Also, Doc, what I remember about the region is that the OP was right there.
Oh, yeah.
The open pantry. That place was open for me to buy alcohol every day there. It was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Every day.
And you'd go in there once a week and you get gas for your scooter. And I would get a tin every, I don't know, 2 days or whatever of Kodiak. I could fill up my scooter and get a tin of Kodiak for $1.75. Walk up.
You should like go quick. You have to go real carefully with the scooter gas, or it would shoot everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. The good old OP. It just was an old. Yeah, it just poured out of there. Absolutely poured out of there. Yeah, the region. I mean, so yeah, region was just absolutely absurd. Again, like the fact that we were actually allowed to live indoors at that time is mind-boggling to me because we never should have.
But like around other human beings.
Oh yeah, they should have just kept us at the seminary until we earned our way out of there. Because it's absurd. It's absolutely absurd.
Just living with the nuns and the fathers and the hey, you guys, you didn't earn your hey Matt Bernstein, you didn't earn your way out of here. We know all about you.
Gotta get you back in here.
You will be here for the long run.
Yeah. Yeah, the region was nice though, because then, like, when we started getting to those house parties in that area, it was a much shorter distance back to the region instead of the towers. That was nice.
Much shorter. So, Doc, what are some of your like, fondest moments on the field?
On the field, I would definitely say, well, the Michigan game my freshman year, the one that we missed the field goal to win. Was probably one of my fondest memories because that really, like the first time playing Michigan was just such a great time. The crowd was different. Everything about that game was just so different. And really felt like we were going to do it. We were finally going to break that streak and we were so close to it. But that was a really fond memory of just that fight with that team. Then Fresno State the next year, the night game, the kickoff classic at night, like that was a magical game. Nick Burley, the rest of Fresno State, like the Bernard Berrien was on that team. The fact that we came back and won that game, you know, that was really special. That was a lot of fun. Of course, the Alamo Bowl going there was a blast.
That was the best. Doc, I have a really cool picture of you blocking for one of those touchdowns against when we played West Virginia at home that year. Big helmet, big face mask, like just so funny to look at all these ridiculous. Yeah.
They gave me one like a helmet like they had from the 60s my freshman year. And then when they realized I was actually starting the next year, they gave me the really nice one and it was like a space helmet. I was like, is there anything in between? Like, can I just get something in between this?
Can we just get a regular
I'll never forget. So I think it may have been bowl practice or spring ball or something, but you made a great block, Bernie, and Coach White was so fired up, and we get in the huddle and you and I were next to each other in the huddle, and Coach White came up and he gave you a swat across the head, bam, because he was so excited, and he walks away and you literally look at me and you go, dude, I just smoked my head in that block. And now he hit me in the head. And you're just so confused as to why he hit you in the head and your head, your eyes are kind of spinning like, oh my God.
One of my pet peeves after figuring this out quickly was I hated hitting people in the helmets. Because all we did was take hits in our freaking helmets. Yeah. So that's why I became a big ass slapper, because it didn't hurt anybody. And I was like, you know what? This is what it's going to be. Because if you slap someone on the back, sometimes it could hurt them. Usually on the tush, didn't really hurt. And I hated hitting people on the helmet only because we were taking shots. And usually I had a headache most of the time, which isn't probably a good thing for my future. But dude, Coach White would get so pumped and just wallop you on the helmet. And I'd be like, Dude,
just give me a second. I'm just kind of coming back to where I'm supposed to be. What am I?
A lot of funny things in the huddle all the time.
Oh yeah, man. Yep. Just standing there and Brooks would have his hand on your head. You know, when like we were leaning forward, the next thing you know, he'd like dig his finger and like touch your neck with it, and you're like, dude, what the get off me? What are you doing? Just mess with you like that? Like, yeah.
Oh man, this has been too fun.
I will say, like, getting hit in the head, Bernie, one of my favorite memories of all time being with you out on the town was there was a party going on, and it was in this big apartment complex where there was, like, there's only one way into the center area, and then all these, like, condos were up there, and then there was, like, a big courtyard in the middle. There was one way in, and then there was a fence on one side. And the cops bust in this thing, and it's, I mean, there's all sorts of people there, and so we bail. And in the side by the fence, I mean, there's a cyclone fence, and then there's a wooden fence. And so majority of us, like, hop, skip, and jump over this fence, and we're running, and we just hear this crunch. And we look back behind us, and you're standing up, and there's just these, there's still shards of wood raining down from the air, and you're standing up. You ran. You bent a cyclone fence right over to the ground and shattered this wooden fence like a cartoon, like a Tasmanian devil. And you're standing up and you're just kind of like getting up and you just go, whoa, and you start running. And we're like, okay, we're good. Brent's good.
I mean, honestly, literally. I probably didn't even see the fence. Any, each and every one of them I didn't see. I just heard cops and I just jetted.
Yeah. And all of us stood there and watching you stand up like, he just destroyed a cyclone fence. I mean, it was completely bent to the ground like someone drove over it.
Hell yeah. By the way, Doc, you took me up. One of my favorite experiences I still remember today is that you took me up to Country Fest in Oshkosh. Yeah. And it was you, Cleaver, DC. There's a couple other people. That was one of my – I just drank beer all night. It was raining a little bit. Like, we couldn't – I couldn't sleep in the tent. No, Cleaver tried to sleep in his car.
Yeah. Do you remember that next morning?
I mean, yeah, kind of. It was
– So it's the sun is coming up, so now we're getting that hot, humid air in the tent, and we're still trying to sleep this hangover off. And there's a guy, like, five tents down, and he wants to fight us. And he's yelling this and that and the other thing. And you get up and you got these blazed orange boxer shorts on and one boot and you climb out of this tent and you got, that's all you're wearing. And you just walk out and you go, what? Silence. The guy just sees you down there and he goes right back to his tent. He's like, yeah, I'm not going to fight that guy.
These guys,
that was it. That was it.
They wouldn't shut the hell up.
No.
And we're like, dude, stop screaming at us. We're going to end this you're not going to like it. It's because we were talking to they had female friends that they took there. And no surprise, they liked us better because, you know, we were kind of awesome. And also I'm with, think about this. So I'm with you in DC who are kind of locals. I'm with Kleber, who's like my bash brother. And I am drinking beer. I'm like, I got these huge dudes with me. I am not scared. This was probably some of my time in Wisconsin whenever like Clink was around. I'm like, I can try to fight everyone in here because no one's going to mess with me because Clink's got my back. And it was the exact same thing. But these dudes wouldn't stop hemming and hawing at us. And I was like, you know what? I was like, shut the hell up. Because the whole camp was annoyed too. I mean, it was like just tents up and down, left and right, everywhere.
The moment he saw you come out in your underwear, he's like, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to mess with that man.
Bright, pasty white, just blinding.
Got those white ankles from the ankle tape that never saw the sun.
I was probably drinking a Busch Light too.
Probably, man.
Oh, that's too funny.
Good old Country Fest, man.
Well, we don't have you here for a whole lot longer, unfortunately, but I wanted to sort of jump way, way ahead. What do you do? You know, what is post-football Bob Docherty doing now? And how did you sort of get to where you are today? And I also want to talk to you about, I know you're training Michael Roski, who also spent some time with Michael Roski, who is coming to the Badgers very soon. So how did you end up in Wautoma and then working with one of the top offensive linemen in the state and the country, who's going to be a future Badger? And what sort of advice have you had for him?
So long tail. Once I got done, you know, playing ball, I wanted to be a firefighter. And so it was like 2006. Everyone wanted to be a firefighter. Somehow Jeff Lang actually made it and has made an amazing career out of it. But I could never find it. It was always like a few things short on the test and this, that, and other thing. So I ended up joining during the Navy to get some veterans points. And I was a Navy corpsman for 5 years. And then I decided that I wanted to actually be a provider. And I was too old to become a doctor at that time. Because I was going to be 30 by the time I got out of the Navy. So I became a nurse practitioner instead and working in the ER. And I met my wife when I came back to go to nursing school, who's from Wisconsin. And we're living now in smack dab of Wisconsin. Two little kids and working in the ER and stuff. And it's been a good transition. It's amazing how fast time flies. I went back to the Michigan game and saw Danny Benning and Ben Johnson a few years ago and then realized it had been 20 years since I saw those guys in U-Burn. It's been 20 years. Like, I mean, the last time I saw you, you were in the basement with Schultz and Bell and Shaves, and I came down there to visit you guys, and you were so excited. You jumped out of your bed, and you put your head right through the ceiling, and there was a hole. You didn't even flinch. You were just so excited. You know, it's been so long. But, you know, and that's the thing, too, like the seminary does to you. I mean, we haven't seen each other in 20 years, but it's a brotherhood, man, forever. Forever and ever. So that's kind of how I got to post football. And it's a weird thing. Sometimes I look up and I'll see like a picture that we have or something or the jersey. And I'm like, well, that really happened. It was 20 years ago. Most of these kids weren't alive, but that really did happen. And as far as Mike goes, so Stellmacher lives very close. Joe Stellmacher, he's coaching back his hometown in Berlin. And a few years ago, a year and a half ago, he called me and he's like, I got this kid from Wautoma. He's an absolute monster. Would you mind giving him some tips and kind of helping him with technique and stuff? So I'm like, yeah, sure. No big deal. And I've kind of gone through this scenario a few times with some people and you see the kid and you're like, yeah, I mean, he's a good kid. It'll be a project. Da, da, da. So I went to go see his kid play basketball and I walked in. Look, we all know what it was like the first time we saw Joe Thomas, right? Like the guy was different, very different. Mike's different. Mike is raw. He didn't come from Brookfield or any of these big high schools where these guys are used to putting out D1 players. So he's got a lot of work ahead of him. But he is one of the best overall athletes at his size I have ever seen. Hands down. He's insanely athletic. And he had the injury, but he's rehabbed it very well. He's doing great. It was a week and a half ago we worked. And his technique he's really starting to get critical on his own technique and understanding, like, and I keep harping that attention to detail. You know, we'd watch film and he'd be like, look, I threw this guy on the floor. Look, I threw him on the ground. And I'm like, you're supposed to, Mike. You're huge. This is Wautoma. You're not going to throw that guy at the next level on the ground. He's going to throw you on the ground. So you got to learn technique. And he's picked it up. He's embracing it. He's learning. And of course, you know, no matter what you are in high school, you make that transition. Everyone has that awful time where you just feel like you're not going to make it. And we'll have those conversations at that time. But, I think he's going to be an amazing, amazing player there. And we'll just keep working on understanding. Like I've kind of worked on concepts of double teams and looking up to the second level and learning things that learned from Coach Christ and how fast he changed everything, including my entire life. That 1 year I had him as a tight ends coach, the man's amazing. He'll have a good career, I think.
Well, I know a lot of fans are very excited about him because, like you said, like, he moves so incredibly well for getting 6'7", 300, whatever his exact, you know, measurables are. He moves so naturally. So, but then you watch the film and it looks like he's playing against fifth graders. Some of these defensive ends might be, you know, 5'4", 120, it seems sometimes. So it can be really hard to gauge. But I know that, you know, everyone appreciates you hopping on with us here today. This is absolutely fantastic. fantastic. Unfortunately, we all have meetings and business to get back to. But I could listen to Bernie stories and seminary stories for days. So maybe we'll have a seminary special. We'll have to start a Patreon for a subscription only NC-17 rated seminary stories sometime.
Those would you definitely have to have a subscription only. So maybe some waivers.
We'll have NDAs for the podcast. So until that happens, though, we want to thank everyone for tuning in to Believe in Badgers on the Believe Network, presented by BetOnline.ag and Oak Bridge Wealth Management. Thank you. Please subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff. And until next time, on Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.